Chapter 9. The next week was as slow and painful as swollen hemorrhoids during a cherry pepper shit. Ron had no way to go anywhere most of the time, and Hank, who had been walking around with a barefoot paradise feeling of wriggling his toes in 4-inch thick carpet, wasn't going to bail him out with the VW joint loops that worked on his head like egg slacks. It was Thursday afternoon before he got a call from Hank. "Hey, man, where you been?" "I don't know," said Hank happily. "You been getting laid, haven't you?" "Yeah," said Hank with new feeling. "Go fucking get her," laughed Ron. "Hump her once for me." Hank didn't answer, so Ron continued. "What are you doing now?"
"Nothing."
"Well, when are you going to see her again?"
"I don't know," said Hank. "We got to wait for her husband to go away. She has to spend some time with Tony so that he doesn't figure anything out."
"Do you want to come over and get fucked up? You can tell me about it."
Hank thought that getting stoned was probably what he meant.
"Okay.
Come on down as soon as you want. You got any pot?"
"Yeah.
I still got some of that yellow stuff."
"Great," said Ron. "But don't roll anything up. I found a piece of old hash in my sock drawer. We can make hash joints."
"Sounds good," said Hank. "I'll be there in about 20 minutes.
Hank cradled the phone as his mother, who seemed to be on cue, called from the kitchen.
"Are you going to have supper with us tonight, Henry?"
The thought of sitting at the same table with him and eating his mother's cooking made him grimace.
"I don't think that I feel like having anything," he said, headed for the bathroom.
After he washed the upper half of his body, he patted himself with powder. He sneered when he felt the stiffness in his sinuses. He went back to his room, slapped on some aftershave. He slipped into a madras shirt with Western snaps. He tilted his head down as he closed them because he liked the neat little clicking sound they made when they shut. Next, he measured about half of his pot into a black film container, tamped it in with his finger. After that, he stuffed his front shirt pocket with cigarettes and his lighter. He slipped the film case and some rolling papers into his jeans. Finally, he picked up his keys, gained some momentum, heading for the door. His mother sat in the kitchen, looking into the glass door of an empty oven.
"Your father hasn't seen you in a week, Henry," she commented.
"Did he mention it?" Hank stopped, tilted his head toward hers. He put one hand in his shirt pocket and with the other squeezed the film container.
"Tell him that I'm all right and that I probably won't be home too late tonight," said Hank.
He waited for the next question and instead headed down the stairs, thinking that his old man would be too blasted to ask him anything by the time he came home. They would probably both sit there after a soggy dinner, drink gin and tonic. He would eventually try to kiss her, whereupon she would remark about how humid and uncomfortable it was. He would get depressed, talk about Henry, then would accuse her of spoiling him. They would exchange loud words that would end with him on the couch. He would read the paper and fall asleep. Chipper began to bark immediately when Hank rang Ron's doorbell. Hank grimaced. It wouldn't stop until he was well into the house.
"Be quiet," hollered Marjorie to the dog, who continued to bark a safe distance away from her.
The hallway door opened into Ron's parents' room and then into the kitchen. Hank always thought the arrangement of rooms was weird, but never mentioned it except for once when he was telling his mother what Ron's mother was like. Ron's room was off the kitchen. Hank could hear the stereo on the other side of the door. Marjorie opened it without knocking. Ron threw up a sharp glance as she ushered Hank into the room. She made several return trips, making a point of not knocking, so that Ron wouldn't forget whose house it was, and asked Hank if he wanted anything to eat or drink. When Ron answered that they'd be going out in a few minutes, she told him with a large smile and a wink at Hank that she'd been talking to his friend, but that he could also have something to eat. Ron's face flushed, and Hank sat in awkward silence. There were two more incursions, one to ask Hank if he was sure about not wanting anything, and another to use the sliding door closet that belonged to her and George. When Ron calculated she was finished, they broke out the dope. Ron was excited. He fingered the joints and squeezed off their ends. "Do you know how fucked up we can get on this stuff?" "That'll be good," said Hank, with a decisive nod. He placed the joints in a plastic bag that Ron gave him, and they headed for the door. Ron trumpeted an "I'll see you later." Chipper barked as they left the house and got into Hank's VW. He threw his head back and blew out a breath. "Wow, it feels great to get out of there. Head for the loop so we can smoke one of these joints, man. Did you eat anything yet?" "We'll do it later. Let's get knocked on our asses first. I don't want to know who the fuck I am by the time the night's over." Hank thought that was a pretty good image of what dope did to a person. There was something about Ron that made him and others nervous. It was also the part he liked about him. The "I don't give a fuck" attitude produced much of the humor that they shared. Hank wanted to get stoned too, and have the car feel like a ball on an endless alley without pins. But there was this ache between his legs that kept reminding him of Joe Lee's mouth. He wondered if he would be able to control his mind at all when he got stoned. Ron stuck his elbow out the window, pretending to be contemplating some far-off idea. "If you'd rather eat first, I'd be fine with that. I mean, if you wanted to go to the Dairy Queen or something like that." "Nah, let's get stoned," confirmed Hank. Ron felt his heart start to pump blood at a good rate again. He turned up an indistinguishable song on the radio. Hank winced, headed for the loop. They smoked the first joint without saying a word. Hank drove extra smooth, and Ron made sure there was no stupid oversights where cops were concerned. They passed the joint at gearship level, while each of them kept a cigarette going. "So what the hell is the story with Joe Lee?" Ron asked. Hank grimaced. Ron mentioned her as if she was a problem, as if they were talking about their home lives or Wellmont or something equally perverted. "She's fantastic," Hank replied, trying to put as much truth into each syllable as he could. "We're gonna go away together." Ron stopped smoking and looked at Hank like he'd just received the gland that no one else had. "Where are you going to take her?" "I don't know yet. Maybe out to live with her sister." Ron had the panicky feeling that someone was watching them and put out the joint. "Why do you want to do that?" Hank slid over the memories of his life. It was a stream of phlegm. It had been like one huge allergy, except for when he made love to Joe Lee. He felt stronger the second time and had taken 45 minutes to come. She cried because she'd been too happy to smile. She told him about how it was with her husband. Hank answered that she didn't have to call Tony her husband if she didn't want to. She scratched his head and told him that he looked like a cat. "It just seems like a good idea," he said to Ron. Ron exploded. "What the kind of a fucking answer is that? You sound like you're from fucking Texas or something." Ron's mind immediately dressed Jolie in a cowgirl suit and put a lasso in her hand. He tried not to giggle out loud, but couldn't help it. Ron couldn't understand what Hank was laughing about, unless it was something to do with his line about Texas. He laughed too. Hank was certain he was getting his chance to have what everybody really wanted out of life, and felt satisfied at where he currently fit into his image of the world. Ron switched the radio stations until they got Neil Young's On the Way Home. They settled into the music, and Hank pictured himself at a door in a dreamlike cloud. Jolie answered it, wearing a freshly scented, flowery bathrobe, holding up their first child to her naked breast. Hank saw himself move forward and hold out a finger for the infant to hold. Then he turned to the reality of Ron. "Let's go to the Dairy Queen." Ron nodded from his lost in the music posture, but when they got to the highways, he exclaimed, "Fuck the Dairy Queen, man." "Why's that?" Hank asked. He was hungry. "Why's that?" asked Hank. He was hungry. He'd been composing his order and savoring the flavor of the sesame seed bun on which his burger would be served. "Let's get eggs or something else, you know. I just got a feeling that it'll be noisy and crowded there. Let's go to the diner or the pancake house." Ron stopped. He was confused because he didn't really know why he didn't want to go to the Dairy Queen. "I don't care," he said. "We can go to the Dairy Queen if you want." Hank was flustered. He had already decided where he could get off the highway and turn the car around when he got hold of Lon's last phrase. The sesame seeds danced through his brain. In his mouth, they tasted like Jolie. Hank gave Ron his "what do you want to do" expression. "You decide, man. I don't care. Anything is okay." Hank pulled into the Dairy Queen lot. The place was only half full. Ron exhaled with relief and nodded at Hank. They put in their usual orders and headed for an empty corner of the room. Ron tapped on the table with an empty straw left behind by a previous customer. He ripped down the paper so he could blow it off. Hank's mind honed in on the first time he'd seen her working at Walmart. He remembered the mysterious rustle her fabric made when she walked. It was a soft signal that perked his ears and seemed to communicate her smooth firmness and its electrifying needs. He imagined her serving him at their own private counter, his hand sliding up her leg until she smiled down on him with that long, beautiful mouth. He held the image for as long as he could. Then he felt Ron get up and head for the counter. Their numbers must have been called. He smiled at how good his timing has become since he'd met Jolie and headed for his food. After they'd finished two more joints and done three circles of the loop, Ron told Hank the story of the fraternity recruiter. Frybrush had been a curly-headed kid who grew up more stupid and overmatched at every turn of Ron's rapier wit. Tears bubbled in Hank's eyes, squinting from laughter. Ron ended the story, embellishing everything except the core of truth. The idea he should write it up as an article for the school newspaper struck him in a silencing way. A dumb voice from the resources belched out, "The fucking school newspaper?" and shook a head back and forth in a "you'll never learn" way. He remembered first reading Avant-Garde magazine and being frightened by how innocent and stupid he was. He wondered if he'd get jumped and called a nigger lover. At that thought, he drew his muscles tight, checked them, and threw a hard-as-nails look out the window. Suppose everybody laughed and called him a jerk-off. Suppose it was something that everybody knew and had almost always known and didn't need to be told again. He told himself that it didn't matter. His scared self would always try to keep him from doing anything new. It was more likely that he wouldn't be able to write anything worth being read. He'd never seen the school newspaper, nor did he have any idea why he'd thought of it. There was this kid who said hello to him in one of his classes, and he'd seen the same kid going in and out of their offices. Then he remembered seeing the front page of the newspaper tacked over the office window. It was a large cartoon that illustrated the sun, Pleasant Valley, Munchkin Land. Hank had forgotten that Ron was in the car. He was startled when Ron asked to light another joint. Hank couldn't believe that Ron wanted to smoke more. He grimaced. "I don't know. I'm really stoned. I don't think that I can drive if I smoke anymore." "You want me to drive?" said Ron sarcastically. Hank was ready to give in and smoke the thing when an interior voice objected. "You mean you're going to take a stupid chance like this for something that you don't even want?" Hank saw a wise finger shaking at him. "This glut next to you has never known when he's had enough." Hank took out the last joint. In his mind's eye, he saw Jolie's arms reaching out to him like she was a gypsy dancer calling him to her tent. He handed the joint to Ron, unlit. "You smoke it," said Hank. He lit a cigarette, and the harsh taste of the tobacco brought his concentration back to the road. He wondered how he'd be driving for the last... He didn't know how long it had been. "You want to head back to my house and listen to some music?" Hank said that he did. Ron sucked easily on the hash joint and concentrated on the cradling canopy feeling he got from the tree branches. They protected everything and defended everyone. All of a sudden, Hank felt relieved and completely able to handle the car. He scooted through the streets with Crusader Rabbit fantasy playing in back of his eyes. They slipped around to the back door, came in through the kitchen, and went directly to Ron's room. Hank walked on his toes and cast sidelong glances into the corners. Ron walked back into the living room and said they were going to listen to some music. "Not too loud," said Marjorie. "We're watching a story." "I'll check to see if it's okay," Ron commented. This time, her voice sounded annoyed. "Just make sure you keep it down." Ron went back to his room and turned on whatever record was on the turntable. It was Dylan. Hank frowned as "All I Really Want to Do" filtered through the speakers. That was all he needed, somebody else to tell him he was a fool. Hank put his hands up to his face, began rocking, and then moaned. Ron laughed. "Really makes you feel good to hear his voice, doesn't it?" "Yeah. Real good." "Do you want to hear something more soothing? Maybe a love song?" Ron was grinning, clearly enjoying himself. Hank didn't know why Dylan's voice had been kicking him in the ass every time he heard it lately. He closed his eyes and there was Bob, big beak and all, snarling at him. Ron was turning his reveries into Popeye cartoons. He got up and changed the record. Neil Young started singing Cowgirl in the Sand. Hank immediately put Jolie in a bikini and stretched her out on a beach blanket. He was rubbing oil into the backs of her thighs. Ron was searching the room for something to write with. Marjorie was going to get her commercial time snack and pause to the door to see if the music was too loud. She knocked on the door and then quickly opened it. Ron winced when he looked up and saw her. "What's the matter?" "Turn it down some. It's getting late." She quickly closed the door so she could get what she wanted, be back in the living room before the movie started again. Ron threw a short, hard punch into the mattress. Hank shook his head back and forth while they exchanged looks. Ron got up and yanked the record off the turntable. "I gotta get out of here. You want to go for a ride?" They exchanged a look of friendship and headed for the door. Ron's hands were clenched tight. He was crossing and uncrossing his legs. His neck twitched. Hank turned the radio on without mentioning Ron's spasmodic condition. His mind drifted to Jolie, and he realized that he was driving towards her house. Ron probably wouldn't even notice if he turned down her street and took a quick look at her house. It was a familiar ride, even from this approach. Hank was pleased with the idea of approaching a woman with which he was familiar. It made him feel especially strong when he looked over at his twitching friend who had rolled himself into a ball against the car door and was inhaling a cigarette at a vacuum cleaner rate. They turned onto the street that led to Jolie's house, and Ron raised his head like an animal feeling something in the wind. "Where are we going?" Hank pulled a face and didn't answer. He drove leisurely past the house, looking at the curtains for silhouettes. None of the front room lights were on. The truck cab sat in the driveway like a stuffed gargoyle. Hank stared at it with fearful disgust. They went around the loop twice, but there was nothing else to smoke, and the radio stations seemed to have saved up all the shitty songs to play at once. Ron had a headache, wanted to get something to eat. "Let's have some coffee," he said, turning the radio off. "I'm going to give this article to the Stoughton newspaper, man. Fuck 'em if they can't take a joke. I don't care what happens." Ron smiled and headed for a West Orange location where they could have coffee and sit in a booth as long as they wanted. Hank's mind created a Jolie's lawn and slid his eyes up to her window. Silhouettes on the shade played comically in the background. He entered the window like a camera. At the beginning of a movie, Jolie was holding her dress in the air like she'd seen rodents. Tony moved across the kitchen on his hands and knees. Beer dribbled from the corners of his mouth. His t-shirt had large stains on the stomach and rips under the arms. Jolie was the girl in a horror movie who was about to be snagged by a creature. He saw the thing's hairy, scarred hands on her smooth knee. He clicked the picture away and just focused on her real-life voice saying, "Hank, you did me good." When Ryan arrived home that night, he headed for the refrigerator, where he saw a large note with his name at the end of it. "Ronald, Jerry called, and you can have the car anytime you want." He studied the note without reaction. He his heartbeat, picked up pace. He smiled to himself and said, "What the fuck? It's only transportation." He bobbed his head as the idea of owning a car that had been kicked in his ass sunk in. He had been knocked on his ass a few times. He was in the 7th grade at the time Richie Porcelli, the toughest kid in the grade, had come running down the street at full speed and belted him before he could look up from the book on human anatomy that he was reading. He saw himself go up and back and then bounce hard on the pavement. His vibrating elbow sent electric shocks up and down his arm. His eyes blurred, refocused, then blurred again. Richie clenched and unclenched his fists as he grinned at Ron. "I did it as a dare," he said. "Don't be a baby, you ain't hurt." "Fuck you," snapped Ron. He realized he was dizzy and couldn't bend his elbow. He wasn't going to fight. "You really suck, you know that?" Brickelli walked away, laughing. Ron tried to remember if he'd ever gotten even with poor Kelly. There was the time in 8th grade when they spent an evening wrestling on Richie's mats. Ron broke out with chicken pox the next day. About a week later or so, when Easter vacation was just starting, he was better. Richie called to say that he had them. "A get back is a get back," Ron told himself. He wondered what happened to the car that hit his car. He tried to picture it all, but could not remember anything except that it was black and square. He took the note off the refrigerator and headed for his room. When Ron saw color coming through the green shades, he crawled across the room to look at the clock. It was 5:30. There were scattered balls of yellow paper all over the floor. Ron put them in a pile and began to take basketball shots into his lampshade. He missed all of them, then gathered them up to try again. When he made one, it dropped down directly into a glass of water under the lamp, where it opened a little like a water lily. The paper grew as it opened, and Ron fell out of the glass onto the floor. "That'll never happen again," he said out loud. He got up and his body creaked like a flight of wooden stairs. He walked out the back porch and lit a cigarette, sat hunched with his elbows resting on his knees. It was a heavy-aired morning and too early to judge the weather of the day. Ron felt the chorus of birds asking me why he had been asleep. His eyes felt watery. He flipped the cigarette into the wet grass and staggered back into his room. He picked up the last draft he'd made of the article and stood in the center of the room, trying to read it one more time. He liked the title, "A Darker Shade of White." He started to read, but his mind became a snowy TV set before he got through the first few sentences. He took off his pants and shirt, flopped on the bed, almost asleep before he landed. Hank masturbated until he came like a water sprinkler. It had taken him a while to get it going, but when he started squirting, he felt like the spurts would go on forever and was exhausted by the time his cock quieted down. He remembered the puny, dribbly little orgasms he used to have. He thought of Joe Lee and smiled the most satisfying smirk he'd ever let out with in his life. The sheet was moist, and his grimaces were fading like wrinkles on a hanger-hung permanent press shirt.